My message today is entitled Pentecost, Fact, Fiction, and Truths. As Julie's already reminded us, today is Pentecost. It's a day when Christians recount the story of the Spirit coming to the followers of Jesus 50 days after Jesus' tomb is found empty. That's the Penta in Pentecost. It means 50. And in far too many churches today, the Pentecost story will be told as the magical birthday story of the church, where the chosen are given gifts from on high, rather than the more powerful and probably more truthful story where a bunch of frightened radicals overcome threats from the powers that be, bind together in spite of their differences, and share with the world a more caring and loving way of being together. It's my hope that my take on this story will resonate with you spiritually, if even on in a very small way. But hopefully it'll resonate with you a little more deeply than that. It's a wild and even unbelievable story, as a matter of fact. To our modern minds, it's very unbelievable. The reality is, at least in my mind, it probably isn't entirely factual. However, I also have to say, in my mind, it is true. It's a story of a tale of how a small, marginalized, fearful group of followers of a wandering rabbi who were scared to death about being associated with him for fear that they would be rounded up and crucified just like him. The story of how they stopped hiding in the shadows and began actually living by his teachings. I would argue that at its core, this less than factual story is a story about how a group of people decided to live into their beliefs, to live lives on fire, to actually live as though they believed in and valued the lessons that this wandering rabbi had taught them. It's the story of people finding the courage to risk being who they say they are. And in times like this, that is certainly a valuable lesson, regardless of how factual the story may be. Let me read this unbelievable story for you again as it's recorded in Acts 2, 1 through 4. And suddenly, from the heavens came a sound like the rush of a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Divided tongues as if of fire appeared among them, and tongues rested on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began speaking in other languages as the Spirit gave them the ability. Of course, you know, no one really knows what happened in that room that day. Personally, I don't think that the tongues of fire actually appeared over anyone's heads. And I also happen to think that people didn't start speaking in strange languages. My guess is that those things are meant to be understood as metaphor. If I had to venture a guess about that day and the events that led up to it, I'd probably say that after their teacher's death, they were very afraid and just a little bit lost. You see, at that point, being associated with Jesus would have definitely been scary, not to mention dangerous. I assume that they were probably wondering what would happen to them next. So they gathered together and they hid. Then as they were hiding, like folks do tend to do when they lose a loved one, they probably spent a lot of time talking with each other about what Jesus and his teachings meant to them. Now, it wouldn't be too big of a leap to believe that they started recalling Jesus' stories and his interactions with others. Thinking about things like how much better this world would be if we practiced turning the other cheek, if we practiced taking the log out of our own eye before removing the speck from someone else's, about how when you feed the hungry and visit the sick and clothe the naked, you're doing those things to God and to each other. In my mind's eye, they probably thought about how exciting and positive life was when they were with him following his teachings. And then they probably thought about what life was like right now as they were holed up inside of those four walls with trepidation about going out into the world. I like to think that they realized that even though they very much enjoyed each other's company and the activities that they shared inside those four walls, that they wanted more out of life than that. And they wanted more for the world than that. I'd like to think that they realized that following Jesus' teachings of love and equality required action. And somehow, they found the courage to do so. I sort of suspect that that's when people started noticing them. They began to live differently. They became the people who welcomed and embraced the outcast. They became people who took care of the sick and the hungry and clothed the naked. They sold their possessions and together they held things in common. Nowadays, admittedly, traditional Christianity would probably call that communism or socialism, but maybe that's something we should all aspire to anyway. In short, for their day and age, they were radical. They included women and slaves and the most despised people in their society. They didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves people of the way. They were seen as the ones who lived differently. Maybe we should be too. So, what does all of this have to do with modern spirituality? Well, hopefully some of it's already obvious. But I'll be specific about part of it. There is a sort of Pentecost movement rippling through Christianity and other religions, particularly, believe it or not, in the more progressive wings. The proverbial fire that ignited the first disciples seems to be putting a fire under folks nowadays as well. More and more, folk are thinking about what it means to live life every day in a way that can change individual lives and change the world. Folks seem to be figuring out that their spirituality is not about going to church, but about being church, or more precisely, being what the church is supposed to be to the world. Love. Love. In formalized religion, this is called missional movement. A missional movement. The idea is that for institutions, specifically those who make them up, to stop spending so much time and energy advertising and trying to attract people to join their congregation, and instead to start spending time going out into the world. It's not unlike what the early Christian communities did after Pentecost as they spread the teachings of Jesus by living them out in their daily lives. In many ways, it's not surprising that we ended up here. You see, in general, the church has become synonymous with the larger dominant culture. In most ways, it's no longer countercultural. It's become an arm and an agent of the corporate consumer culture in which we live. It's also become a tool of politics. The missional movement sees being a follower of the way as an extraordinary countercultural way of leading life. If the church is to be an organization that takes seriously the teachings of Jesus, it should have no part in the status quo. It should not support the practice of the modern consumer-driven mindset. It should be in the margins of society, not only calling out for love, equality, and compassion, but being a living example of what love, equality, and compassion look like. One of the fascinating things about a missional life together is that it breaks down barriers between people of different faiths and different spiritual perspectives. When our primary focus is on love, equality, and compassion, the other differences seem to fade away into the background. Why someone is practicing love, equality, and compassion seems much less important than the fact that they are practicing love, equality, and compassion. The interesting thing is, once you start living a missional life, it's very difficult to go back. Your life changes. Being the change you wish to see in the world is actually self-reinforcing. Catching the missional spirit means seeing that everything you may have once thought you knew about life and church and religion might be wrong. Once you see life as a mission, you just can't unsee it being that way ever again. When spiritual organizations take on a missional outlook, it provides them with opportunities for the community they exist in, and it allows them to see how we live rather than what we profess and believe. The story of Pentecost, while not factual, certainly should challenge spiritual people. It should challenge us to live out what we say we believe so powerfully and so completely that we are seen as people who live differently. Not just people who think and believe differently, but people who actually live differently. In the Pentecost story, fire appeared among the people, but the reality is that people living with the precepts of love, equality, and compassion out in their lives, they are their own fire, and frequently those behaviors will cause others to catch fire, to become passionate about living life that way as well. So, is Pentecost's story factual? I very seriously doubt it, but it does contain a lot of truth. And the truth is that living life holed up inside four walls pales in comparison to living a life on fire for love, equality, and compassion. And living a life that focuses on love, equality, and compassion has a way of not only improving the world around us, but it has a way of improving our own spiritual lives as well.